Welcome to Brad Kyle's Brad's Motorworks podcast. We'll be talking about some things about BMW, some things of cars in general, and some things about car repair. I hope you find it educational, enlightening, and I hope it increases your understanding of your car. And maybe along the way we'll have some fun too. Thank you for listening, and here we go. Episode number 86, Catalytic Converters, What They Are, How They Work. Hopefully, I tell you, this one could be a long one. I don't really know for sure how long it's going to be. Be honest with you, I'll give credit to Wikipedia. I just basically, looked up how they work, and this is it's 7 pages of stuff. Even I learned a few things, so it's very much well-researched, all-inclusive. Hopefully, you don't get bored with it, but it covers the whole shebang as far as what is a catalytic converter, how does it work, who invented them, what they do, so on and so forth. Basically, it's going to be history, construction, placement of the catalytic converter, types of catalytic converters, unwanted reactions, catalytic converters on diesel engines, installation, damage that can happen to them, regulations, negative aspects, theft, and I think lastly is diagnostics. Yeah, so it's a very thorough, going to be a very thorough podcast. So anyway, here we go. A catalytic converter is an exhaust emission control device that reduces toxic gases and pollutants in exhaust gases from an internal combustion engine into less toxic pollutants by catalyzing a redux reaction, an oxidation and reduction reaction. Catalytic converters are usually used with internal combustion engines fueled by either gasoline or diesel, including lean burn engines, as well as kerosene heaters and stoves. Obviously, this is covering more than just automobiles, but that's okay. There are certainly catalytic converters on other devices. The first widespread introduction of catalytic converters was in the United States automobile market. To comply with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's stricter regulation of exhaust emissions, most gasoline-powered vehicles starting with the 1975 model year must be equipped with catalytic converters. These two-way converters combine oxygen with carbon monoxide and unburned hydrocarbons to produce carbon dioxide and water. In 1981, two-way catalytic converters were rendered obsolete by the three-way catalytic converters that also reduce oxides of nitrogen, which is also, by the way, called NOx. However, two-way converters are still used for lean burn engines. This is because three-way converters require either rich or stoichiometric combustion to successfully reduce NOx. Although catalytic converters are most commonly applied to exhaust systems in automobiles, they are also used on electrical generators, forklifts, mining equipment, trucks, buses, locomotives, and motorcycles. They are also used on some wood stoves to control emissions. Well, imagine that, your wood stove with a catalytic converter. This is usually in response to government regulations, either through direct environmental regulation or through health and safety regulations. History. Catalytic converter prototypes were first designed in France at the end of the 19th century, when only a few thousand oil cars were on the roads. It was constituted of an inert material coated with platinum, iridium, and palladium, sealed into a double metallic cylinder. A few decades later, a catalytic converter was patented by Eugene Holdry, a French mechanical engineer and expert in catalytic oil refining, who moved to the United States in 1930. When the results of early studies of smog in Los Angeles were published, Holdry became concerned about the role of smokestack exhaust and automobile exhaust in air pollution and founded a company called OxyCatalyst. Holdry first developed catalytic converters for smokestacks called CATS for short, and later developed catalytic converters for warehouse forklifts that use low-grade unleaded gasoline. In the mid-1950s, he began research to develop catalytic converters for gasoline engines used on cars. He was awarded a United States patent number, and I won't tell what it is, but for his work. Widespread adoption of catalytic converters did not occur until more stringent emission control regulations forced the removal of the anti-knock agent tetramethyl lead from most types of gasoline. Lead is a catalyst poison and would effectively disable a catalytic converter by forming a coating on the catalyst surface. Got to change pages here, folks. Make sure I get the right page. Catalytic converters were further developed by a series of engineers including Carl D. Keith, John J. Mooney, Antonio Elazar, and Philip Messina at Engelhard Corporation, creating the first production catalytic converter in 1973. Construction. The catalytic converter's construction is as follows. The catalyst support or substrate. For automotive catalytic converters, the core is usually a ceramic monolith that has a honeycomb structure, commonly square, not hexagonal. Prior to the mid-1980s, the catalyst material was deposited on a packed bed of alumina pellets in early GM applications. Metallic foil monoliths made of canthal are used in applications where particularly high heat resistance is required. The substrate is structured to produce a large surface area. The cordierite ceramic substrate used in most catalytic converters was invented by Rodney Bagley, Erwin Lachman, and Ronald Lewis at Corning Glass, for which they were inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame in 2002. Wow. The wash coat. A wash coat is a carrier for the catalyst materials and is used to disperse the materials over a large surface area. Aluminum oxide, titanium dioxide, silicon dioxide, or a mixture of silica and alumina can be used. The catalytic materials are suspended in the wash coat prior to applying to the core. Wash coat materials are selected to form a rough, irregular surface, which greatly increases the surface area compared to the smooth surface of the bare substrate. This in turn maximizes the catalytically active surface available to react with the engine exhaust. The coat must retain its surface area and prevent sintering of the catalytic metal particles even at high temperatures, 1,000 degrees Celsius. That's hot, by the way, folks. Ceria or ceria zirconia. These oxides are mainly added as oxygen storage promoters. The catalyst itself is most often a mix of precious metals, mostly from the platinum group. Platinum is the most active catalyst and is widely used, but is not suitable for all applications because of unwanted additional reactions and high cost. Palladium and rhodium are two other precious metals used. Rhodium is used as a reduction catalyst, palladium is used as an oxidation catalyst, and platinum is used for both reduction and oxidation. Cerium, iron, manganese, and nickel are also used, although each has limitations. Nickel is not legal for use in the European Union because of its reaction with carbon monoxide, also toxic nickel tetracarbonyl. Copper can be used everywhere except Japan. Upon failure, a catalytic converter can be recycled into scrap. The precious metals inside the converter, including platinum, palladium, and rhodium, are extracted. Okay, and I'll be talking about this here in the a little bit down the road, but this is why, because of the cost of the precious metals that are used, this is why, unfortunately, catalytic converters can be are a potential theft issue. So, placement of catalytic converters. Catalytic converters require a temperature of 800 degrees Fahrenheit, that's 426 degrees Celsius, to efficiently convert harmful exhaust gases into inert gases, such as carbon dioxide and water vapor. Therefore, they are placed as close to the engine as possible. Types of catalytic converters. A two-way. A two-way or oxidation, sometimes called an oxycat, catalytic converter has two simultaneous tasks. Oxidation of carbon monoxide to carbon dioxide. Oxidation of hydrocarbons, unburnt and partially burned fuel, to carbon dioxide and water. Okay. And the second one is actually a combustion reaction. Okay. This type of catalytic converter is widely used on diesel engines to reduce hydrocarbon and carbon monoxide emissions. They were also used on gasoline engines in American and Canadian market automobiles until 1981. Because of their inability to control oxides of nitrogen, they were superseded by three-way converters. Three-way catalytic converters have the additional advantage of controlling the emission of nitric oxide and nitrogen dioxide, both together abbreviated with NOx, and not to be confused with nitrous oxide, which are precursors to acid rain and smog. Okay. Since 1981, three-way oxidation reduction catalytic converters have been used in vehicle emission control systems in the United States and Canada. Many other countries have also adopted stringent vehicle emission regulations that, in effect, require three-way converters on gasoline-powered vehicles. The reduction and oxidation catalysts are typically contained in a common housing. However, in some instances, they may be housed separately. A three-way catalytic converter has three simultaneous tasks. Bear with me for a moment. Oxidation of carbon monoxide to carbon dioxide, oxidation of unburnt hydrocarbons to carbon dioxide and water, and in addition to the above NOx reaction. These three reactions occur most efficiently when the catalytic converter receives exhaust from an engine running slightly above the stoichiometric point. For gas, most gasoline combustion, this ratio is between 14.6 to 14.8 parts of air to one part of fuel by weight. Think about that for a minute, folks. This is not Wikipedia. This is me talking. That's by weight. So if you look at it from, let me give you this, and I may have mentioned this in another podcast I did some time ago. If we look at it by weight, it's a person could say, well, how much air takes up a pound of air as compared to a pound of fuel. The way it works out, and this is not my calculation, this is off an article I read in a trade magazine, basically to burn 1 gallon of fuel, okay, by weight, it takes 10 to 12,000 gallons of air to burn 1 gallon of fuel. Think of a fuel tanker truck. We've all seen the gasoline tanker trucks going down the road, okay? That tank, think about how big that is. That's anywhere from 10 to 12,000 gallons. Now, in this case, it's holding fuel, but if it was empty, it'd be full of air. So all of that air is required on a normal gasoline engine to burn 1 gallon of fuel. Okay, so anyway, back to Wikipedia. The ratio for autogas or liquefied petroleum gas, LPG, natural gas, and ethanol fuels can be significantly different for each, notably so with oxygenated or alcohol-based fuels, with E85 requiring approximately 34% more fuel to reach stoic, as in stoichiometric, requiring modified fuel system tuning and components when using those fuels. In general, engines fitted with three-way catalytic converters are equipped with a computerized closed-loop feedback fuel injection system using one or more oxygen sensors. Though early in the deployment of three-way converters, carburetors equipped with feedback mixture control were used. Three-way converters are effective when the engine is operated within a narrow band of air-fuel ratios near the stoichiometric point, such that the exhaust gas composition oscillates between rich, excess fuel, and lean, excess oxygen. Conversion efficiency falls very rapidly when the engine is operated outside of this band. Under lean engine operation, the exhaust contains excess oxygen and the reduction of NOx is not favored. Under rich conditions, the excess fuel consumes all of the available oxygen prior to the catalyst, leaving only oxygen stored in the catalyst available for the oxidation function. Closed-loop engine control systems are necessary for effective operation of three-way catalytic converters because of the continuous balancing required for effective NOx reduction and HC oxidation, HC meaning hydrocarbons, i.e. fuel or unburned fuel. The control system must prevent the NOx reduction catalyst from becoming fully oxidized, yet replenish the oxygen storage material so that its function as an oxidation catalyst is maintained. Three-way catalytic converters can store oxygen from the exhaust gas stream, usually when the air-fuel ratio goes lean. When sufficient oxygen is not available from the exhaust stream, the stored oxygen is released and consumed. A lack of sufficient oxygen occurs either when oxygen derived from NOx reduction is unavailable or when certain maneuvers such as hard acceleration enrich the mixture beyond the ability of the converter to supply oxygen. Okay. This is why oxygen sensors, which of course that's a whole nother, actually I don't think I've actually done a podcast on oxygen sensors. That's why it's very critical that those are maintained properly. Most manufacturers have a recommended replacement interval mileage-wise for oxygen sensors. In today's world, it's upwards of 100,000, 120,000, 150,000 miles. But this is also where they can become contaminated, as well as the catalytic converter can become contaminated, which I'll talk about here in a bit. But this is where, frankly, keeping a car properly tuned up or, you know, maintained properly, some of these parts that we're talking about are going to last longer. So, okay, next, unwanted reactions. Unwanted reactions can occur in the three-way catalyst, such as the formation of odoriferous, hydrogen sulfide, and ammonia. Formation of each can be limited by modifications to the wash coat and precious metals used. It is difficult to eliminate these byproducts entirely. Sulfur-free or low sulfur fuels eliminate or reduce hydrogen sulfide. If you've ever been maybe going up a hill and you're around other vehicles, that hydrogen sulfide, that's where you'll sometimes smell. It smells like a rotten egg kind of a smell. That's what you're smelling is hydrogen sulfide. Okay. For example, when control of hydrogen sulfide emissions is desired, nickel or manganese is added to the wash coat. Both substances act to block the absorption of sulfur by the wash coat. Hydrogen sulfide forms when the wash coat has absorbed sulfur during a low temperature part of the operating cycle, which is then released during the high temperature part of the cycle, and the sulfur combines with hydrocarbons. See, there we are. That's them basically describing what I just mentioned, where it's a higher load, you're going up a hill, something to that effect. Okay. Diesel engines. For compression ignition, i.e. diesel engines, the most commonly used catalytic converter is the diesel oxidation catalyst. DOCs contain palladium, platinum, and aluminum oxide, all of which catalytically oxidize the hydrocarbons and carbon monoxide with oxygen to form carbon dioxide and water. These converters often operate at 90% efficiency, virtually eliminating diesel odor and helping reduce vehicle particulates, soot. These catalysts do not reduce NOx because any reductant present would react first with the high concentration of O2 and diesel exhaust gas. Reduction in NOx emissions from compression ignition engines has previously been addressed by the addition of exhaust gas to incoming air charge, known as exhaust gas recirculation. In 2010, most light-duty diesel manufacturers in the U.S. added catalytic systems to their vehicles to meet new federal emission requirements. There are two techniques that have been developed for the catalytic reduction of NOx: emission under lean exhaust conditions, or selective catalytic reduction, known as SCR, and the lean NOx trap, or NOx absorber. Instead of precious metals containing NOx absorbers, most manufacturers selected base metal SCR systems that use a reagent such as ammonia to reduce the NOx into nitrogen. Ammonia is supplied to the catalyst system by the injection of urea into the exhaust, which then undergoes thermal decomposition and hydrolysis into ammonia. The urea solution is also referred to as diesel exhaust fluid. Diesel exhaust contains relatively high levels of particulate matter. Catalytic converters do not remove PM, so particulates are cleaned up by a soot trap or diesel particulate filter. In the U.S., on all on-road light, medium, heavy-duty vehicles powered by diesel and built after January 1st of 2007 must meet diesel particulate emission limits, meaning that they effectively have to be equipped with a two-way catalytic converter and a diesel particulate filter. Note that this applies only to the diesel engine used in the vehicle. As long as the engine was manufactured before January 1st of 2007, the vehicle is not required to have the DPF system. This led to an inventory run-up by engine manufacturers in late 2006 so they could continue selling pre-DPF vehicles well into 2007. So they sort of played a supply game there, is what they're describing. Lean burn spark ignition engines. For lean burn spark ignition engines, an oxidation catalyst is used in the same manner as in a diesel engine. Emissions from lean burn spark ignition engines are very similar to emissions from a diesel compression ignition engine. Installation. I hope you aren't bored to death by now. I've only got a few more pages, but this is all good stuff. I mean, everything you ever wanted to know about a catalytic converter, but were afraid to ask. I've actually learned a few things here as I was reading through this, deciding if I was going to use this or not. Installation. Many vehicles have a closed coupled catalytic converter located near the engine exhaust manifold. The converter heats up quickly due to its exposure to the very hot exhaust gases, enabling it to reduce undesirable emissions during the engine warm-up period. This is achieved by burning off the excess hydrocarbons which result from the extra-rich mixture required for a cold start. When catalytic converters were first introduced, most vehicles used carburetors that provided a relatively rich air-fuel mixture. Oxygen levels in the exhaust system were therefore generally insufficient for the catalytic reaction to occur efficiently. Most designs of the time, therefore, included secondary air injection, which injected air into the exhaust stream. This increased the available oxygen, allowing the catalyst to function as intended. Some three-way catalytic converter systems have air injection systems with the air injected between the first NOx reduction and second HC and CO oxidation stages of the converter. As in two-way converters, this injected air provides oxygen for the oxidation reactions. An upstream air injection point ahead of the catalytic converter is also sometimes present to provide additional oxygen only during the engine warm-up period. This causes unburned fuel to ignite in the exhaust track, thereby preventing it reaching the catalytic converter at all. This technique reduces the engine run time needed for the catalytic converter to reach its light-off or operating temperature. Most newer vehicles have electronic fuel injection systems and do not require air injection systems in their exhaust. Instead, they provide a precisely controlled air-fuel mixture that quickly and continually cycles between lean and rich combustion. Oxygen sensors monitor the exhaust oxygen content before and after the catalytic converter, and the engine control unit uses this information to adjust the fuel injection so as to prevent the first NOx reduction catalyst from becoming oxygen loaded, while simultaneously ensuring the second HC and CO oxidation catalyst is sufficiently oxygen saturated. Damage. In other words, what can happen to catalytic converters? Catalyst poisoning occurs when the catalytic converter is exposed to exhaust containing substances that coat the working surfaces so that they cannot contact and react with the exhaust. The most notable contaminant is lead, so vehicles equipped with catalytic converters can run only on unleaded fuel. This is why we had to go to unleaded fuel, folks. Okay, and of course, the way that they help prevent someone from putting in leaded fuel versus unleaded is that the unleaded fuel, if you ever notice, well, I'm sure you probably haven't, the actual fuel filler at the gas station, you know, the filler neck off the handle that you put into your fuel tank, that on an unleaded, that is smaller than a leaded one or a diesel one for that matter. The diameter of that pipe from the handle where the fuel's coming out is smaller on unleaded fuel than it is on leaded or diesel fuel filler handles, okay? So in other words, you can't take a diesel fuel filler handle from the gas station. It won't fit into your fuel tank filler area because it's too big, okay? Okay. Other common catalyst poisons include sulfur, manganese, originating primarily from the gasoline additive MMT, and silicon, which can enter the exhaust stream if the engine has a leak that allows coolant into the combustion chamber. Phosphorus is another catalyst contaminant. Although phosphorus is no longer used in gasoline, it and zinc, another low-level catalyst contaminant, was until recently widely used in engine oil anti-wear additives such as zinc diethiophosphate, also known as ZDDP. Beginning in 2004, a limit of phosphorus concentration in engine oils was adopted in the API, SM, and ILSAC GF4 specifications. So this is where oil specifications are constantly changing as well. Okay, it's not just gasoline, it's not just oil. This is it's a package deal as far as trying to take care of this stuff. Okay. Depending on the contaminant, catalyst poisoning can sometimes be reversed by running the engine under a very heavy load for an extended period of time. The increased exhaust temperature can sometimes vaporize or sublime the contaminant, removing it from the catalytic surface. However, removal of lead deposits in this manner is usually not possible because of lead's high boiling point. Any condition that causes abnormally high levels of unburned hydrocarbons, raw or partially burnt fuel, to reach the converter will tend to significantly elevate its temperature, bringing the risk of a meltdown of the substrate and result in catalytic deactivation and severe exhaust restriction. Usually, the upstream components of the exhaust system, manifold header assembly and associated clamps susceptible to rust, corrosion, and or fatigue, e.g. the exhaust manifold splintering after repeated heat cycling, ignition system, coil packs, and or primary ignition components. Wow, this is a whole list of all kinds of goodies. Since 2006, ethanol has been used frequently with fuel blends where fuel system components which are not ethanol compatible can damage a catalytic converter. This also includes using a thicker oil viscosity not recommended by the manufacturer, especially with ZDDP content. This includes high mileage blends regardless of its conventional or synthetic oil, oil and or coolant leaks, e.g. blown head gasket inclusive of engine overheating. Vehicles equipped with OBD2 diagnostic systems are designed to alert the driver to a misfire condition by means of illuminating the check engine light on the dashboard or flashing it if the current misfire conditions are severe enough to potentially damage the catalytic converter. Regulations. Emission regulations vary considerably from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Most automobile spark ignition engines in North America have been fitted with a catalytic converter since 1975, and the technology used in non-automotive applications is generally based on automotive technology. Regulations for diesel engines are similarly varied, with some jurisdictions focusing on NOx, nitric oxide and nitrogen dioxide emissions, and others focusing on particulate soot emissions. This regulatory diversity is challenging for manufacturers of engines, as it may not be economical to design an engine to meet two sets of regulations. Regulations of fuel quality vary across jurisdictions. In North America, Europe, Japan, and Hong Kong, gasoline and diesel fuels are highly regulated, and compressed natural gas and LPG, auto gas, are being reviewed for regulation. In most of Asia and Africa, the regulations are often lax. In some places, sulfur content of the fuel can reach 20,000 parts per million. Any sulfur in the fuel can be oxidized to sulfur dioxide or even sulfur trioxide in the combustion chamber. If sulfur passes over a catalyst, it may be further oxidized in the catalyst to SO2, may be further oxidized to SO3. Sulfur oxides are precursors to sulfuric acid, a major component of acid rain. While it is possible to add substances such as vanadium to the catalyst wash coat to combat sulfur oxide formation, such addition will reduce the effectiveness of the catalyst. The most effective solution is to further refine fuel at the refinery to produce ultra-low sulfur diesel. Regulations in Japan, Europe, and North America tightly restrict the amount of sulfur permitted in motor fuels. However, the direct financial expense of producing such clean fuel may make it impractical for use in developing countries. As a result, cities in these countries with high levels of vehicular traffic suffer from acid rain, which damages stone and woodwork of buildings, poisons humans and other animals, and damages local ecosystems at a very high financial cost. Okay? This is why it's important that we all do our share. Okay? Not just the U.S., not just Europe. We all live on the same big blue marble, folks, and we all have the same atmosphere. So, you know, it's cost versus benefit type factor, but It's important some of these other countries, you know, get on the bandwagon and take care of business properly. So, negative aspects. Catalytic converters restrict the free flow of exhaust, which negatively affects vehicle performance and fuel economy, especially in older cars. Because early cars' carburetors were incapable of precise fuel-air mixture control, the car's catalytic converters could overheat and ignite flammable materials under the car. A 2000 test on a 1999 Honda Civic showed that removing the stock catalytic converter netted a 3% increase in horsepower. A new metallic core converter only cost the car 1% horsepower compared to no converter. To some performance enthusiasts, this modest increase in power for very little or no cost encourages the removal or gutting of the catalytic converter. In such cases, the converter may be replaced by a welded-in section of ordinary pipe or a flanged test pipe, ostensibly meant to check if the converter is clogged by comparing how the engine runs with and without the converter. This facilitates temporary reinstallation of the converter in order to pass an emission test. In many jurisdictions, it is illegal to remove or disable a catalytic converter for any reason other than its direct and immediate replacement. In the United States, for example, it is a violation of Section 203, Section A3A, of the 1990 amended Clean Air Act for a vehicle repair shop to remove a converter from a vehicle or cause the converter to be removed from a vehicle except in order to replace it with another converter. And Section 203A3B makes it illegal for any person to sell or to install any part that would bypass, defeat, or render inoperative any emission control system device or design element. Vehicles without functioning catalytic converters generally fail emission inspections. The automotive aftermarket supplies high-low converters for vehicles with upgraded engines or whose owners prefer an exhaust system with larger-than-stock capacity. Okay. It always has been, since 1967, whatever smog laws that were in effect at that time up to today, okay, it always has been illegal to remove, disconnect, modify, or tamper with any emission system on a car in the United States, okay? Always has been. It's potentially, not only are you violating EPA law, but if you're like in California, you're violating California CARB laws, okay? It's a felony, folks, okay? So, you know, if you do it yourself as the owner of the car and you're a consumer, you could sort of plead a certain amount of ignorance, but it's still illegal and you're not helping the environment. If a professional does it, we're potentially off into prison, okay? It's up to a five-year prison sentence with $5,000 fine. That's per occurrence, by the way, okay? So, warm-up period. Vehicles fitted with catalytic converters emit most of their total pollution during the first 5 minutes of engine operation, for example, before the catalytic converter has warmed up sufficiently to be fully effective. In 1995, Alpina introduced an electrically heated catalyst called ECAT. It was used in Alpina's B12 5.7 ECAT based on the BMW 750i. Heating coils inside the catalytic converter assemblies are electrified just after the engine is started, bringing the catalyst up to operating temperature very quickly to qualify the vehicle for low emission vehicle designation. BMW later introduced the same heated catalyst developed jointly by Emmetech, Alpina, and BMW in its 750i in 1999. Some vehicles contain a pre-cat, a small catalytic converter upstream of the main catalytic converter, which heats up faster on vehicle startup, reducing the emissions associated with cold start. A pre-cat is most commonly used by an auto manufacturer when trying to attain the ultra-low emissions vehicle rating, such as on the Toyota MR2 Roadster. So, just real quick, we started out with what would be considered a low-emission vehicle. Then we went to a ULEV, which is ultra-low emission vehicle, and then we went to a SULEV, S-U-L-E-V. Are you ready? I'm not kidding. This is what they're calling it. So we went from a ULEV to a SULEV, super ultra-low emission vehicle. I'm waiting for the day, and this is my own comedy, where it's going to be like super-duper ultra-low emission vehicle. Hasn't happened yet. They're not taking my suggestion on that, I guess. Environmental impact. Catalytic converters have proven to be reliable and effective in reducing noxious tailpipe emissions. However, they also have some shortcomings in use and also adverse environmental impacts in production. An engine equipped with a three-way catalyst must run at the stoichiometric point, which means more fuel is consumed than in a lean burn engine. This means approximately 10% more CO2 emissions from the vehicle. Catalytic converter production requires palladium or platinum. Both of the world's supply of these precious metals is produced near Norilsk, Russia, where the industry, among others, has caused Norilsk to be added to Time magazine's list of most polluted places. So there's a cost factor here, folks. Obviously, you don't want to live near Norilsk, Russia. Pieces of catalytic converters and the extreme heat of the converters themselves can cause wildfires, especially in dry areas. What they mean by that is that you're on a road trip or whatever, you're driving around, the exhaust system is super hot, and you by chance happen to park around, let's say, tall or somewhat tall grass. And now your exhaust system is literally touching the grass. Okay, you pull off the side of the road. You get a nice little fire starting underneath your car. Okay. Theft. Because of the external location and the use of valuable precious metals, including platinum, palladium, and rhodium, catalytic converters are a target for thieves. The problem is especially common among late model trucks and SUVs because of their high ground clearance and easily removed bolt-on catalytic converters. Welded-on converters are also at risk of theft, as they can be easily cut off. Pipe cutters are often used to quietly remove the converter, but other tools such as a portable reciprocating saw can often damage other components of the car, such as the alternator, wiring, or fuel lines. Thus, there are dangerous consequences. Rising metal prices in the U.S. during the 2000s commodities boom led to a significant increase in converter theft, and unfortunately, a catalytic converter can cost more than $1,000 to replace. This amount increases, sometimes greatly, if further damage was done to the vehicle in the process of removing the converter. Okay. So, I don't know if it's so much in the news anymore, but it's less of an issue, probably. But like they said, you got your little light-duty pickup or SUV, because they're higher off the ground, then the person can easily crawl underneath them. So, diagnostics. We're almost done. Okay. Long-winded here. Diagnostics. Various jurisdictions now require onboard diagnostics to monitor the function and condition of the emission control system, including the catalytic converter. Onboard diagnostic systems take several forms. Temperature sensors are used for two purposes. The first is as a warning system, typically on two-way catalytic converters, such as are still sometimes used on LPG forklifts. The function of the sensor is to warn of a catalytic converter temperature above the safe limit of 750 degrees Celsius or 1380 degrees Fahrenheit. More recent catalytic converter designs are not as susceptible to temperature damage and can withstand sustained temperatures of 900 degrees Celsius or 1650 degrees Fahrenheit. Temperature sensors are also used to monitor catalytic function. Usually two sensors will be fitted, with one before the catalyst and one after, to monitor the temperature rise over the catalytic converter core. The oxygen sensor is the basis of the closed-loop fuel control system on a spark-ignited rich burn engine. However, it is also used for diagnostics. In vehicles with OBD2, a second oxygen sensor is fitted after the catalytic converter to monitor the O2 levels. The O2 levels are monitored to see the efficiency of the burn process. The onboard computer makes comparisons between the readings of the two sensors. The readings are taken by voltage measurements. If both sensors show the same output or the near or the rear O2 is switching, the computer recognizes that the catalytic converter is not functioning or has been removed and will generate a malfunction indicator lamp and affect engine performance. Simple oxygen sensor simulators have been developed to circumvent this problem by simulating the change across the catalytic converter with plans and pre-assembled devices available on the internet. Although these are not legal for on-road use, they have been used with mixed results. Similar devices apply an offset to the sensor signals, allowing the engine to run a more fuel-economical lean burn that may, however, damage the engine or the catalytic converter. NOx sensors are extremely expensive and are in general used only when a compression ignition engine is fitted with a selective catalytic reduction converter or a NOx absorber catalyst in a feedback system. So we're talking back, we're going back to diesel on that deal there, folks. When fitted to an SCR system, there may be one or two sensors. When one sensor is fitted, it will be pre-catalyst. When two are fitted, the second one will be post-catalyst. They are used for the same reasons and in the same manner as an oxygen sensor. The only difference is the substance being monitored. Okay, well, that's the end of that. Mouthful there. I hope you were able to take it all in. Maybe it's way too much more than what you really want to know about catalytic converters. Like I say, I learned a few things as far as who invented some of these different, took ideas and brought them to fruition. But I certainly, through my studying and training and stuff, I knew most of what that was talking about. But hopefully it wasn't too much for you. Who knows, maybe you were just on pins and needles the entire time there while I was reading all of that. So I appreciate your time. I hope you got something out of it. Maybe it was an answer to a simple question, and the rest of it was all, unnecessary. But I appreciate you listening. As usual, if you want to get a hold of me via email, or if you have any thoughts or reviews or ideas for new subjects and titles as far as podcasts go, you can get me at bkpodcast5@gmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn. And again, as I've mentioned, I do own and operate a repair shop in Newbury Park, California, in the U.S. It's called Brad's Motor Works. And so, yes, I have a couple different websites. You can certainly take a look and different things, see what's going on, whatever. And that's about it on this one. I appreciate your time. I hope you got something out of it. Hopefully it wasn't just boring you to death. So I hope you have a fantastic day and a great tomorrow. Stay safe out there. Let's take care of one another and love one another. And the whole world will be a better place. So thanks again for listening. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode. It's been an honor and a privilege to spend time with you. I hope you found this of value. Please share it with family and friends. Above all else, with all you're getting, get understanding. May God bless you and keep you. And thank you again.